All right, guys, welcome back to the newest episode of the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Brian Acevedo, joined by my co-host, Danny Duarte. Wow, Dan, what a playoff series we have on our hands this year. We could potentially have, guys, three game sevens this weekend. I think it's pretty insane just how good these conference semifinals have been. Obviously, technically, with the Memphis and Golden State series, it could be four game sevens, but with the news that we got today about Ja Morant, I don't know how likely that's looking. Dan, not sure if you heard. I know it just came out right before we got on the air here, but Ja Morant has been announced that he is doubtful to return for the series. I guess the simplest question, and I think I know my answer, are the Grizzlies done for in this series? What do you think?
I think they're pretty much cooked. I could see them scraping by and winning a game, given the fact that they came up very close in the last game at home. So we do know they're a pretty resilient team, and they also, I think, had like a 20-2 record when Ja Morant did sit out during the regular season. They can get it done without him. I just don't think they win the series. So, Max, I think this series goes six games.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I could see Memphis winning a game five out of pride, and then obviously forcing a game six, but I think that's about where it ends for this series. Ja just makes that big of a difference. There's really no question about it. As far as game four, I mean, the Warriors just kind of found a way to win at the end there. They pretty much trailed the whole game, and they came back in that last minute. The Grizzlies did kind of show their youth, but honestly, I think with a healthy Ja Morant, you may have a 2-2 series here, so Golden State definitely the beneficiary of the injury bug for sure, despite losing Gary Payton earlier in the series. But other than what was your say something in?
No, I was just gonna say you can't compare losing a role player to the most improved player.
No question. No question there for sure. But Golden State looks scary, guys. There's really no doubt. They know what they're doing. Steph, you know, obviously he hit a new playoff milestone last night, 500 three-pointers made. So just wild. I think they are definitely going to be a heavy favorite now going into the Western Conference. They seem to have a lot of momentum compared to Phoenix, at least as of right now. So let's see what ends up happening there in the West with them. As far as the other game last night, Dan, Celtics, Bucks, game four. This series is now tied 2-2. Obviously, we saw a lot of physicality and back and forth from Giannis Antetokounmpo and Al Horford. You know, what are your thoughts on what happened, that resurgence that we saw from Platano Power, Al Horford over there? What are you thinking about that?
I'm shocked at the fact that I think that when you go back to it, they got Al Horford for Kemba Walker, and look at how that's panned out. Just great resilience from the veteran throughout the entire year, throughout his career. He's really showing his leadership and his skills against this Bucks team. I don't think any of us expected him to come out the way he has. And, you know, we've known that he's a great passing big man, a good rebounder, a solid scorer. But for him to be putting it up against this really tall, heavy, lanky Bucks team, it says quite a bit. So props to him, and I expect him to keep it going in game five.
Yeah, Horford was special to watch in game four for sure. When you look at it, Giannis, he's been almost different to me, Dan, post-championship. I don't know if it's that he's tired. Obviously, this Boston series, we knew going in they were going to be, you know, a lot to handle defensively, but he's been doing some things that I've really never seen Giannis do. You know, flexing, the dancing, the shimmy. These are things that, you know, this is not what we've known Giannis to be. I know he's out there obviously trying to have fun at the same time, but it just seems so different from the young, humble Giannis pre-championship. You know, you have any thoughts on that as far as anything you've seen different from Giannis in this series?
No, not really. Like, I'm not reading into it too much. I know what you're referencing with the shimmying and kind of the dancing, but there have been other times where he posterizes someone and just runs back on defense, you know, or his lack of desire to complain against the refs. So I still see that humility and that hunger to be successful and be a championship once again from him. I just think that he's not taking himself as seriously as we have, but I don't think it's cause for concern.
Yeah, I'll never question Giannis's effort. That's always going to be there. I've just seen some things and some clips. Maybe some of you guys know what I'm referencing, but like he put his hands behind Jaylen Brown's neck, like almost like holding him, like, hey, like I'm the big dog here. Marcus Smart, there was another clip where he was kind of trying to help Giannis up, and Giannis like kind of gave him a hard time about it. And Marcus Smart like fed up and he just ran away. It's just little things like that that I was like, I haven't seen that from Giannis before. It stood out to me a little bit, Dan.
Yeah, definitely. I can't disagree with that. It's a new norm for Giannis. I just think it's kind of him finding himself. I mean, we have to keep in mind that he's still relatively young in the NBA. So as he grows, as he matures, as he rises to best player in the world status, these are just going to be some of those things that we see him kind of step into.
Yeah, to me, there's nothing more interesting than how you respond to the championship. Obviously, I think we all know, you know, the Bucks winning. It's kind of like, how do you respond the next year, you know, the next playoff run? I mean, you just played a full season. Now you just played a full other season trying to defend your title, playing these, you know, playoff games. It takes a load on somebody. So even though he's young and we know how strong he is and how he's built, to me, this is a great test of character, especially with Chris Middleton out, his Robin, as many call. So we'll see. This to me is going to be a big test for Giannis moving forward. Obviously, we know that Giannis was one of the finalists for MVP. I think it's actually a great way to just quickly drop, since we didn't get a chance to discuss it earlier, that Nikola Jokic was, apparently, according to Woj, is going to be announced as the league's MVP. This is going to be his second year. We all know Danny and I have talked ad nauseum about the back-to-back and what the expectations look like if you're going to win two MVPs in a row. Dan, I know we've talked about this offline quite a bit, but, you know, what are your thoughts? Do you think Embiid was still more deserving after all this?
1,000%. I'm going to stick to my guns. Embiid should have won it, if not Giannis. We can't reward a player winning MVP, coming in sixth place in their conference, and then getting swept in the first round. Or sorry, getting knocked out the first round. I know it's a regular season MVP award, but it's awarded during the playoffs, so it's got a bad connotation with it. When the player being awarded the most valuable award is at home, like on a Skype call or whatever, I just think it's got negative news. And it goes back to the historical reference. You know, Jokic is now going to have more MVPs than Shaq and Kobe each. Like, let that sink in. That's what we're saying about this guy. That's what we're saying about him being like an all-time perennial great, which he hasn't proven that yet. I vehemently disagree with this election by the voters. They adamantly said that it's because of his advanced analytics and the fact that he was, you know, this great stat creator. I want to see these people have that same argument in the upcoming years. And also, like, what's going to be the excuse for not awarding him when he puts up great numbers moving forward? I don't understand.
Right. And look, I get where you're coming from, though. All in all, when it comes to the MVP race, I don't think they really could make a bad decision. I know some of you out there feel the same way. When it comes to Jokic, Giannis, and Embiid, all three of them had an amazing season. To be honest, I know some have preferences. Some lean towards one player more than the other. I can see for sure the argument of Giannis or Embiid just based off their defensive presence and what they contribute on that side of the floor. To me, what bothers me about the MVP award is they focus so much of the award on offense and like offensive statistics. I would like to see them moving forward kind of place a little bit more emphasis on defense, because that makes a big, big impact as well. And then obviously the winning aspect has to matter. I'm not saying it needs to be the best player on the best team, because then if that was the case, Devin Booker should have been the MVP, and we all know how he is with playing with Chris Paul. It to me though, Dan, I don't know. I'm not as upset about it as you are. I don't think they could have made a wrong call. What I will say, and I think you mentioned it at the beginning, is if I'm the NBA, I would definitely look at moving forward the announcement of the NBA MVP, because it's definitely a bad look to have your MVP get pretty much swept in the first round, despite, you know, the circumstances. And we all know with Denver and their injury situation, it's not a good look for your most valuable player in the league to not make it out of the first round consecutive year. So That's how I feel.
2 years in a row, man, that they've done this, right? And it's been Jokic both years. It's nothing against him. It's just, again, like he just doesn't get it done when it matters. And maybe it's the optics, maybe it's the circumstances or the credentials that we need for voting for MVP, but I don't like to put him in the same category as all-time greats when he just hasn't kind of done enough to justify that yet.
What I will say, I think he's going to go down as the greatest second round pick in NBA history, which I think says a lot. And even though some may disagree with whether or not he deserved those MVPs, you can't dispute the fact that he produces at his position. He's probably going to go down as one of the best passing big men in NBA history. So you can't really, you know, shun your nose at that, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll wait and see. He definitely has one up on a lot of people from the second round.
Yeah, and I think we did get a good view of what Joel Embiid's value is as one of the most valuable players in the league in the first two games of the Miami Heat and Philadelphia 76ers series. And Dan, I think it's a perfect segue to talk about your favorite team. You know, you went into this series obviously pretty confident. I think you had the Heat in six. Where are you feeling? I know you guys have lost two in a row now. Kyle Lowry's out tonight. I mean, I'd be a little concerned for sure. You got Duncan Robinson sitting on the bench collecting, you know, a couple million every game, it seems like. Where are you at as far as the Heat Sixers series goes?
I'm not as concerned about Kyle Lowry missing time, just given the fact that his impact wasn't as great as we would have liked it to have been when he was playing in game 3 and 4. So I know they're going to be able to just kind of hand out his minutes accordingly across the players. And then with Duncan Robinson, I am a little bit confused as to why he hasn't played barely any minutes this series, if at all. I think that my biggest takeaway is that Spoelstra likes the lineups he has right now. And Duncan just isn't part of that 8-man rotation right now because of his defensive liabilities. But, you know, if we have another bad shooting night like we have had in the past two games, then you might as well give him a try and not be as stubborn. But heading into game five, I definitely have a optimistic point of view on it. I think that the Heat are positioned to win just given that home court advantage. And also they can't have three bad shooting nights like in a row. Like, that's just so unlikely. And the fact that the Heat barely lost a game 4 while shooting 20% from 3 is just crazy. Well, I think Philly shot like over 40. So I think that just goes to show that the Heat are just a deeper team. And as long as they can contain Joel Embiid, sure, Harden can go off for the occasional 20-plus point night. Same thing with Maxey, same thing with Tobias. But as long as they can contain Joel and have other contributors apart from Jimmy step up, I think we have a good shot of winning this, maybe in 7 instead of 6 now, but I still like the Heat's discipline more over Philly's.
What does contain Joel Embiid mean to you, Dan?
So yeah, that's a great question. I think that he has to score, keep his scoring underneath his average, which he averaged 30 points for the season. So as long as they keep him probably like to 24, I think that's good, if not less. And really just not break away from the defensive like consistency they've had. So Joel's going to get points. There's no doubt about it. But try not to double team him too much. Try not to take away attention from some of the other shooters that they have. I mean, game 3, Danny Green shot the lights out. That's because we were too focused on Joel being on the floor. Same thing with some of these other players, like James Harden now finally can, I guess, ease up and not think too much into it and step into his shot. Because we are more worried about Joel, they just have to realize, like, Bam is good enough to cover Joel one-on-one, keep him under his season average, and then let everyone else guard their players. As long as we keep that consistency and that discipline that we've had up until, again, game 3, some of game 4, not really, like game 4, they were still pretty disciplined, I think that they can win the series.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can win the series. I'm not feeling as optimistic as you are, though. I know they have game 5 at home, but they have not beaten the Sixers with Embiid yet. So obviously that's the only reference that I can make. So I think, you know, this to me, Dan, and I think I messaged you this is the swing game. This is the pivotal game. whoever wins game five is going to win this series. As far as I'm concerned, I don't see a path where the Sixers lose tonight and then win two in a row. I don't see a path where the Heat, win tonight and then lose two in a row. I don't see it happening. So I think whoever wins game five is going to somehow win this series. I think that the biggest question marks is how are Philly's role players going to play in Miami? I think we've seen that Miami definitely turns up the heat defensively, no pun intended, when they play at home. And when it comes to Philly, they need to knock down those shots because obviously Miami has been a little offensive challenged in certain games. And I think that that's going to bring a need to have Duncan Robinson play tonight. I think Spoelstra is... I don't think he's stubborn enough. I think if the game is close and, you know, he can get some time in for Duncan there to squeeze him in, just start to warm him back up and rest and transition him back into the game, I think he's going to take the opportunity to do so. I think you got to have a short leash with Max Strus. I know he's played well. I know he's shot well. But if the shot is not falling, you got to try something else because you can't lose game five at home, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he can't be hard-headed with Spoelstra, can't be hard-headed with this game. And I like Strus, I like Martin, I like Gabe Vincent, Oladipo, you know, all the rotational players. But if they're not playing well, you know, sub them out, get the next guy in. I mean, all these guys are professionals, they understand, move on to the next one, next man up, some mentality.
Exactly. And I think the Sixers would need a big game from Tyrese Maxey, because I think he's proven as now the third option that he needs to have the ball in his hands. He needs to get shots. And Tobias Harris, I mean, Dan, we talked about him during fantasy in a negative way towards the end of the year. But man, Tobias Harris has played really, really well as the fourth option for Philly. I think he makes that team very scary offensively if he's hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, he's played really well. But again, like the Heat, they somehow stayed in it. Like, that's the one takeaway I have from all these guys going off. They're somehow still in it every game. So, you know, I think that they just need a couple shots to go down or do the next man up mentality and see how it goes from there.
Yeah, and I'm not going to convince Dan that the Heat are not going to win tonight, no matter what I say. So irrelevant at this point. With that said, another debate that Dan and I had last year was, you know, who deserved Coach of the Year between the Knicks' Tom Thibodeau and the Phoenix Sun Monty Williams. It does look like Monty Williams didn't get it last year, but he did go ahead and win it this year. He was announced as the 2022 Coach of the Year for the NBA. A big shout out to Monty. I know a lot had Taylor Jenkins in there with good reason. Obviously, there were some other strong candidates as well. But I think you can't go wrong with Monty. The Suns had an amazing year, obviously, in the regular season. They look pretty poised to return to the finals. But you still have the Dallas Mavericks in the way. We have a 2-2 series. I didn't expect this. I definitely thought Phoenix was going to take one of those games and take it to go 3-1. That did not happen. Now we've got a swing game five tonight. Dan, what do you think is going to happen in this series? I think the Suns personally are going to take care of business, but things have been pretty crazy these playoffs, so I don't know.
Yeah, I still have faith in the Suns, even though Luka and Mavs have given them a fair bit of trouble lately. I just think that they're the better coach team, and also they just have more playoff experience and more veteran leadership. Like, it's that simple. Now Jason Kidd has definitely shown his coaching acumen with these playoffs. First round out coached Quinn Snyder. He's definitely giving Monty Williams Coach of the Year a run for his money. But I just think that as a collective, as a whole, the roster for Phoenix just is far superior to the Mavs, and it's going to start showing in these next couple games.
Yeah, I think home court is going to also prove to be very valuable. I've actually been a little disappointed with how the Suns have played on the road. It feels like a lot of fluky things have happened for them during these road games against New Orleans and now against Dallas. So we'll see. I do think Phoenix is going to win game five. Dallas, that's kind of a toss-up for game six. I really think it could go either way. But I think if it does go seven, I'd be shocked if the Suns did not make it out of this series. Just for you, what you touched on, the depth, the experience of being here last year, I think they're so motivated. And that's not to take anything away against Dallas. I think they're a tier below. And I don't think this is quite their year. So with that said, obviously a lot of NBA playoff stuff going on. But there are some other NBA topics that Danny and I did want to talk about. Dan, I know you had some hot take questions for me. I want to hear them. Let's hear what you got.
All right, guys. So, yeah, just a quick segment just to kind of round out these episodes. We're going to give you guys – well, we're going to give each other some hot take questions, give you guys our opinions on these hot take questions. Each is going to be about a minute and a half. So, Brian, Mike Brown just got a four-year contract from Sacramento to coach the Kings. With the Kings slated to have another lottery pick this upcoming basketball season, do you see any improvements in their year, in their future? Are they a play-in tournament-bound team moving forward?
You know, the Kings are tough, man, because with all the ineptitude that they've had over the last 20 years, I would be a fool to tell you that they're 100% going to turn it around, because they just haven't proven to be able to do so. I think the most important thing, they got to hit on this lottery pick. That's, to me, the most important deal, because he needs to be a foundational piece moving forward to pair with De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. Ultimately, I don't think those guys are going to be the types of players that are going to win you many playoff games, at least not in the current Western Conference, unless they both improve and they build a better roster around them. What I will say, though, I like the Mike Brown hire a lot, Dan. I think he's someone who's going to come in. He's known for his being a defensive coach. I think the Kings have been missing that for a really long time. I think that he's going to need to get Fox and Sabonis to buy in, though. And that's kind of my question mark. Fox was decent in college defensively, or pretty solid. Sabonis, though, has not really been known. He doesn't have great lateral quickness. To me, if that's going to be the culture that they're building in Sacramento, they're going to have to go ahead and get these two stars to buy in. That to me is the biggest question mark on this franchise.
I have a lot of big question marks around this franchise, mainly due to the fact that Sabonis and Fox are two very heavy ball dominant players. I don't know how they're going to mesh. I know towards the end of the year, the record looked better and the stats were okay, but it didn't lead to a lot of wins. So, you know, what's going to come of it? I think Mike Brown ultimately has a pretty big, you know, ask from him just in order to get this team to succeed. But I do agree with you. They do need to focus more on the defensive end. Let's see if Davion Mitchell continues to grow in his sophomore year and they can get some defensive pieces and, you know, moving forward for this team. I'd like some of the pieces they already have, but they need to build it out much better.
Yeah, and no more guards, Sacramento. I think the Halliburton move, the draft was already a lot. Then you had the Davion Mitchell. Like, you guys have enough guards. All right, go get some bigs.
We'll see what they end up doing. I would not be shocked if they still draft a guard. So, you know, that says a lot. All right, Brian, next hot take question. Who do you think should be the next Lakers head coach? Should it be Darwin Ham, Mark Jackson? What are your thoughts on this whole head coach search recruiting situation going on over in LA?
My gut feeling says it's going to be Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson is probably the biggest name on the coaches market right now. And we know the Lakers like a big name. They like the flash. They want, obviously, an NBA coach with some experience like Mark Jackson has. And then, because you're going to have these big stars, LeBron, AD, Westbrook, potentially, they're going to need a quote-unquote big-name coach, in my opinion, to immediately respect him. However, I like Darvin Ham. I think he should be the next Lakers coach. I think he's got great experience as an assistant. He's coached in plenty of playoff games. He was the lead assistant on a championship Bucks team last year. I mean, to me, when you're ready to get promoted to head coach, that's one of the things I want to see. Can you be an assistant, or and especially a lead assistant on a major program, a championship winning program? He's done that. I think the players would respect him as much as they would a rookie head coach. And I think Ime Udoka for Boston this year is proving to be a great example of what a rookie head coach can do with a solid roster.
So I'm of the opposite spectrum of you. I think that the Lakers are probably going to hire Darvin Ham. But unfortunately, it's for the wrong reasons. I mean, hey guys, we have to look back at the fact that Phil Jackson is currently leading the head coaching search for the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't know why, but he is a huge factor. We know Linda and Kurt Rambis are a huge factor. And frankly, we know that Jeannie Buss hasn't had the best input from outside sources for the entire Lakers organization. So for all those reasons, I think that they're probably going to want to get Darvin James or Darvin Ham. I keep thinking about the NFL, but they're going to want to have Darvin Ham just because he is a first, he would be a first time head coach. He'd probably be okay with a lot of the things they'd want to implement, such as staffing his roster and also making like putting pressure on him to do certain things, because that's just how the Lakers have been run. And that's what they've shown us to be the last several years. Whereas Mark Jackson, he has the coaching pedigree. He's already got a name for himself. He would definitely push them back a lot more and tell them it's my way or the highway, and they'd rather take a candidate that they know they can control.
Any Quinn Snyder vibes for the Lakers, Dan?
Maybe. It depends. I think he does get fired. Moving forward, I mean, if I'm Danny Ainge, that's one of the first moves I do. But I just don't know what he's willing to concede to the Lakers ownership and management. I think that's going to be the hardest selling point. I mean, we know that they didn't even want to give either Monty Williams or Ty Lue multi-year contracts compared to Frank Vogel, and that was a huge
sticking point. That's big. So, that means they'll probably get a younger coach. I mean, you'd like to think.
I think it's going to be Darvin Ham. Again, I want him to get an opportunity. I want him to, you know, be a head coach. I fear it's going to be for all the wrong reasons.
Like I said. And if not, maybe they go Doc Rivers, but you know, we'll go into that another time.
All right, Brian. And while you touched on Quinn Snyder, that's a really good transition to my last hot take question for you. Let's say you're Danny Ainge, the president of basically basketball operations for the Utah Jazz. How do you improve the Utah Jazz and their lackluster roster and performance?
Pretty easy, Dan. I don't want to say pretty easy because it's actually a loaded question. I'd trade Rudy Gobert. He's the highest paid player on the roster, but to me, he's a little too, not a little, he's very much one-dimensional to be your highest paid player on your roster. I think you got to move him. To me, Mike Conley, God bless him, he's a little bit past his prime. To me, I'd either release or trade him. Right now, he's not scheduled to be a free agent until 2024. But I would definitely try to make a move with Mike Conley, because I just don't think his availability is going to be great enough to compete in the Western Conference consistently. Overall, I think it's kind of like a soft rebuild. I definitely try to keep Donovan Mitchell, but it's easier said than done. We know how these superstars get when they're not winning and they see other superstars winning. They want to go play in a winning culture, and it's tough, but you just kind of try to convince Donovan Mitchell, like, hey, this is going to be maybe a rough year or two, but we can turn things around. We got to offload Rudy Gobert and kind of build around you. I would try to keep a guy like Royce O'Neal. I think he's a very valuable rotation piece. I try to extend him on a team-friendly deal, try to get some good value there. But ultimately, man, I think Gobert and Conley are the two pieces that got to go.
Yeah, I'm so aligned with you. I'd probably add on another piece and have to say, sorry, Quinn Snyder, you're getting the boot. You haven't led us anywhere, and your lack of adjusting in the playoffs just is unforgivable at this point. But again, those three pieces, you kick them out the door, and then you see what you can get back. Rudy Gobert can easily get you back multiple first-round picks or some really good, solid role players to center around Donovan, Bojan, Royce O'Neal, Jordan Clarkson, so on and so on.
Rudy, I think my prediction for this summer, I think Rudy Gobert is going to be a name that we hear a lot on the trade block. So let's see what ends up happening. I think it's going to be a very fun summer of basketball. We got a good couple of weeks left of some great playoffs. I think this has been one of the most fun playoffs I've seen in a couple of years for sure. Dan, I did have one last question about Gobert. It came up on social media, Shaquille O'Neal versus Rudy Gobert. What would that look like? How many points do you think Shaq would score on Gobert?
Shaq would break the all-time scoring record on Gobert.
I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair, totally appropriate. No surprise. But Dan, before we go, any last words before we turn on this Heat Sixers game?
No, just guys, again, we're gonna be transitioning to kind of more NBA topics as the playoffs wane down. So just be on the lookout for that. And make sure to have us subscribed, because the schedule has been a little bit random, sporadic at times lately. So just that way you're up to date when the episodes drop.
Yeah, and we apologize for that. We're just trying to find out, you know, when are the best days to release And then there's games almost every night during the week. So we've just been trying to schedule around that. And this was a nice break. We have some game fives coming up now. So I think this was a good time to release. And yeah, we appreciate all of you guys listening, supporting. Make sure if you like the pod, tell your friends, spread the message about us. And if you've got ideas for good content, we're always open to hear it. And if you ever want to hop on the show, send us a DM. We're always open to taking guests on the show and all that. So with that said, hopefully you guys enjoy these game fives. We'll be on social media to talk to you all about it. Have a great rest of your night, guys.